There's a lot at stake. And certainly if you listen to the Republican candidates who have been crisscrossing Iowa, it's a little bit scary.
It seems almost a formality that Ethan Couch would be moved out of the juvenile courts. He's almost 19, and he's fled the country after missing an appointment with his probation officer.
You hear strands of the Eagles and everything from country music stars of today to rock bands to, you know, all areas of the radio dial.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is 5:09, and today is Tuesday. It's January 19th, 2016. And if you're anything like me, you have the shakes this morning, the Twitter shakes. Social media has been down, at least Twitter has been down for at least 2 hours. And it is regaining a little bit of its usability within the last half hour or so. But if you rely on Twitter for anything this morning, it has probably put a kink in your morning. And we're all wondering what's wrong. The Twitter blog says only that there was an outage and that they were working to restore it. So we're waiting to hear officially from Twitter. But there is some functionality. It was down over all of the platforms, including TweetDeck, on your devices, and on the web. So that has the makings, even though I don't want to speculate, of some sort of attack or some sort of preemptive takedown before an attack. We'll monitor that story throughout the morning. The Asian markets are doing halfway decent this morning as the United States gets ready to open markets again after the Martin Luther King holiday. The Asian markets the Nikkei up 92 today, the Hang Seng up 399. Shanghai up 94, the Sensex up 292. In Europe, the shares higher as well, up 102. And the Dow futures are up 236 points this hour. The S&P futures up 29, pointing to an open on Wall Street that will be in positive territory. All of this comes after China's economic growth edged down 6.8% in the final quarter of 2015. Trader and consumer spending there weakened. That is the concern rippling through the global markets today, but as you can hear by those numbers, it's really not affecting the markets, at least not now. It showed that the Chinese economy is in a little bit of trouble, but at least the markets have stabilized today, and investors are not reacting as negatively as many thought. Wall Street is hoping that the holiday weekend, day off, provided just a little bit of breathing space. Last week was a pretty bad week on the Dow. On Friday, the Dow slid 391 points. The S&P fell about 42 points, and the NASDAQ dropped 127 points. The U.S. crude oil is above 30 bucks this morning, 30.50 a barrel. The U.S. dollar edged up against the yen and the euro. Just one major economic report out today. That's the National Association of Home Builders Housing Market Index for January. In other news today, the Davos World Economic Forum is getting underway in just a week or so. Iran is center stage. North Korea has been disinvited, as we've reported. The World Economic Founder, Klaus Schwab, says he is worried about Europe's future, actually the global future of the economy and the gaping inequalities worldwide. He says the most recognized annual confab is geared toward finding solutions to those problems.
This is a meeting to look at the interconnection of all the global trouble spots, if I may say so. If you look what's happening now in the financial markets, this is also a consequence of the fast movement of fintech. Technologies which change the whole financial world.
Anybody who's anybody in the economic world will be at the economic forum in Davos. It starts on the 20th. The University of Chicago Business School is giving 8 full tuition scholarships annually to professionals in the nonprofit and government fields, reflecting a growing investment among business schools. And Super Bowl 50 is 3 weeks away. Many advertisers are starting the digital pregame a little bit early. They have started releasing a barrage of online teaser videos, culminating in some full commercial reveals right before the big game. Ads are running at, well, I'm not going to tell you how much they are. I'm going to let Mark Carman do that as we discuss the business of sports today. Mark is with us here on the show at The Carm on Twitter. Kevin Powell is in for Dave Ennett today. He's also here with us to begin this discussion. So how much is a commercial? That's 30 seconds.
It's a mere $5 million, Steve. $5 million for a 30-second spot, which is, of course, the most expensive airtime in TV histories. And as you just mentioned, marketers, they're increasingly, as they put it, relying on the digital platforms and promotions to get their money's worth, because $5 million for 30 seconds, even for the Anheuser-Busches of the world, that's a lot of dough. So they're trying to get as much as they can through social media and leading up to the game as well. So they're building up at that that excitement for the Super Bowl commercial.
You know, and Kevin, is this become less about the game and more about these commercials for most people?
Well, I think that's just how big of an impact social media has. And Facebook had more views on their ads on mobile devices than desktop computers over the past year. So, I mean, that just goes to show how everyone's face is buried in their cell phone or their tablet. So I think, as Mark said, the multi-platform, we're going to continue to see ads just being pounded at us on Twitter and Facebook during the game, because everyone comments on the commercials now. You know, so during breaks, that's everyone's commenting that whether they liked it or they didn't like an ad. So if there is some backlash towards an ad, I think it comes across even a little bit harsher than in the past, than somebody's talking about the water cooler the next day at work.
Yeah, you know, and I'm not like a total sports guy. I like sports. I love watching the Super Bowl, but I remember more commercials than I do plays from Super Bowls.
Well, and I think that, listen, when you're at your Super Bowl party, if you look around the room while the game's going on, most people are conversing. And
right, it's opposite
time
in the Super Bowl.
Right, and when the commercials go, everybody stops and pays attention. Oh my God, what's GoDaddy going to do? Or I guess some of the stuff I'm seeing, a Mini USA, is they got a 30-second commercial for its Mini Clubman, one of their cars, and they Serena Williams and Abby Wambach and Randy Johnson, Tony Hawk, rapper T-Pain, Harvey Keitel, they're all involved, and they're trying to, you know, they're trying to connect Mini USA is by saying, hey, be different, like be unique, and, you know, drive our car. And it's, you know, the athletes are coming with real messages, trying to, you know, tug at the heartstrings of everybody to buy their vehicle.
We're going to continue this conversation about the business of sports in our next segment with Mark Harmon. Kevin Powell here again for Dave Ennett today, and we'll be discussing as well plans for more security at Wrigley this season and some other things. And the question, too, is this money, $5 million, well spent for advertisers? That's coming up in our next segment.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 520, and welcome back to The Opening Bell. We're talking about the business of sports with Mark Harmon. Kevin Powell is in the studio as well. He's in for Dave Ennett today. Dave's traveling for sports. And we were talking before the break about this annual lead-up to the Super Bowl. I guess we call it a pregame, where they start, you know, leaking out some of these commercials, and then they start putting some of them in full up. And, Mark, my question is this, do advertisers really get their money's worth for $5 million in 30 seconds?
Well, it's a good question. And look, Anheuser-Busch, you know, your Budweiser, your Bud Light, they have bought less in Super Bowl ads for the second straight year. They're down to 3 minutes. They were 4 minutes to three Super Bowls ago. So, I mean, that's maybe a slight indication that people think that the prices are a little bit high. You look at the numbers, Super Bowl, the viewer's likelihood of buying the product is at 6.6%. And if for the most popular spots, like Hyundai a couple years ago, people were 39.5% more likely to buy Hyundai, and Budweiser was at 37.8%. How they compute that, I'm not smart enough to really know those, how they put the numbers together, but that's what they do. And there's very little on the negative side. It's very, the numbers on people that are unlikely to buy the product really doesn't come out. It's by far the biggest audience for any one event that you'll ever get. So
yeah,
the advertisers think it's worth it.
And that was my question. Is it still the most watched event on television?
Yeah, every year it is. And, you know, it's, you kind of talked about teasing these commercials. They've almost turned into the event themselves. And we were talking earlier, Steve, before the show about if there was any teasers yet for any commercials. We really didn't see anything yet, but it's they're teasing and almost promoting a commercial.
Yeah.
It's twofold. You see it on your computer, on your mobile devices, and then you're looking forward to it. But from what I've been reading, a lot of these market research companies discuss how cautious they are because of the backlash you can feel on Twitter. Last year, the commercial was kind of coined as the dead kid commercial. It was a nationwide commercial, a ton of backlash on social media, and they said it had one of the worst reactions. This is from Reality Mind, said that more than 10% of people who saw the ad said they wouldn't buy insurance from Nationwide as a result. That was the biggest number out of any of the spots. So you see how important social media is and that negativity that grew right after that spot aired last year.
Which plays into what Kevin's talking about, Steve, that the advertisers this year are going to play it a lot safer. Mm-hmm. Nationwide took a risk last year, and that backfired on them. I'll give you Kantar Media. They found that the ads generate $11 million worth of publicity for advertisers. So for $5 million, you're getting $11 million. I'm not a math major, but that seems like a good buy.
Yeah, and one of the other ads I remember too. This may have been last year or the year before. Was the puppy commercial where the puppy got on the bus and went. I thought that was a good commercial, and I'm a dog lover, and I thought, and they ended up pulling that commercial completely before it even aired on the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and there was also the golden retriever puppy being rescued by the Clydesdales, and that one also had a negative reaction on social media. And Budweiser said they're ditching the pooch this year; it's not coming back. So, but it's interesting how somebody who maybe before social media you may like a spot and it may not affect you at all, but then you log on to your social media now and you see hundreds of people ripping a spot, it changes your view completely on it.
Yeah, but on social media, if you go and try to find that ad on Budweiser, it's there on their YouTube page, mm-hmm. and it's gotten millions of hits over the past year.
Yep, and that's why, look, marketing agencies, they are under the gun. You better come up with something. There's so much dollars there that you better come up with a commercial that's going to connect and it's going to be able to be used in pre and post and the whole thing, because otherwise then the big companies are going to be looking for somebody else to come up with for next year's game.
Yeah, Super Bowl 50, so that's what, XX? What?
No, I think today, is it just this year? It's kind of boring. I think they're ditching the Roman numerals.
Is it VV? What is it?
I think it's just LV.
Anyway, Super Bowl 50 is coming up.
February the 7th, Santa Clara, Levi's Stadium, out on the West Coast. 3:25 is the kickoff.
Well, for those of us who are baseball fans, dreaming of warm weather and sitting at the friendly confines, there's a story out about new security plans coming for Wrigley Field. What's going on?
So Crane Kenny is, one of the upper-ups for the Cubs, was, affected with the Paris bombings, and the Cubs have hired a consultant, and they're seeking additional help from MLB. And bottom line, for fans going to Wrigley Field this year, they're going to have magnetometers, your standard, going to go through like airport security. So it's going to take longer to get into the park, and the Cubs are also trying to get help from the city to secure a 100-foot perimeter around the park on game day. So, you used to be able to drive right down Addison past the park. They do not want that anymore. So it's, for people in the neighborhood, it'll be a little more challenging to get around. I think it makes sense. It's kind of crazy that
you go to a Sox game, you're taking everything out of your pockets, you're walking through a metal detector. I think this is a sign of the times, and to be honest, I think there's so much buzz about this team, I don't think they have to worry about ticket sales next year too much.
Well, that's a true story.
And this is one of those things that in the news world we call a soft target. All of these sporting facilities, shopping malls, places that you wouldn't think of. Maybe Wrigley Field is a little bit more than a soft target, but there was a dry run about this last year. Last season, I don't know if you remember, they found a device, or they found something that they thought was a device and actually cleared the ballpark and brought in the dogs, and it was a pretty big deal for about a couple hours. Thankfully, it was, I think, after the game. But it shows you what first of all, the effort it takes to clear the ballpark of just even people who are there, but it also the security risk that is involved.
Yeah, and listen, people, we're getting crazier and crazier seemingly, right? If you go back in time, just not necessarily in baseball, but listen, Monica Seles was stabbed on the court when she was playing tennis back in the day, and when she was at her heyday, by a lunatic fan who was trying to back Steffi Graf. Anything's possible. So, and people are scared. So, and the Cubs are scared. So they're going to do more to try to keep their ballpark safe. And Crane makes an interesting point. Like the sidewalk, it's 6 feet to the street. It's not. It's the way Wrigley, it's been there so long that it's outdated with how it's secured versus many stadiums, that there's just a bigger perimeter around it.
Yeah, and if I remember correctly, there aren't even metal or concrete pylons that would prevent a car from driving into the ballpark.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Okay. Good discussion, Mark Harmon, TBO Sports. Kevin Powell here this morning as well. You can find Mark on at the Carm. Of course, he's also on WGN Plus, K Powell 720. He'll be in for Dave Ennett throughout the morning with sports. Super Bowl coming up. We're going to keep you posted on that. Maybe we'll have some spots, commercials the next time we talk. The news is coming up. Vic Vaughn standing by with us. It's 5:28 on the opening bell.
How about his fundraising, and how about when he does his personal financial disclosure form and he doesn't put on that he's borrowing money from Goldman Sachs?
Coming across that bridge, it was like the tears is trying to come. I'm keeping it moving, and I'm going straight on where I got to go.
Eagles and their fans, we have a relationship.
Those are some of the big stories happening around the world this morning. We'll keep you covered all day. Steve Cochran Show coming up at 6 o'clock. News throughout the morning with Andre Darlis, the big story in the half hour. I'll have the top story at the top of the hour. It's all coming up this morning on WGN. This is the opening bell. Dow futures are higher, surprisingly, this morning, up 241 points. The S&P futures up 29. And let's bring in Heather Long of CNN Money, who has, like me, been probably scratching her head this morning. Heather Long, by the way, CNN Money's markets and investment investing editor. Heather, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell again.
Yeah, it's great to be here for Relief Rally Day.
Yeah, so that's what's going on then. I thought we would see a lot of negative territory, a lot of red arrows going down this morning.
Yeah, kind of like you. It definitely feels like people are taking a pause here because the data that's come out in the last 24 hours is not data that should reassure most people. I guess maybe you could argue that people are looking around the world saying, well, hey, it could be worse. So China just reported its worst economic growth in 25 years, and most people think it's probably even worse than what they're saying. Oil is still in a very, very low point, so anytime oil's been dropping, the market's been dropping. Oil's up a little bit today, so we're right around that $30 a barrel mark again, but with the Iran sanctions lifting over the weekend, a lot of people think that Iran will begin to flood the world market with its oil again. It wants to make money from selling that oil to the world. And so that's going to just add to this global supply glut of oil that we've got going on. So if you look at the two fear factors that have been driving the market, China and oil, there's not a whole lot of relief that we've heard in the last few hours or few days here.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned the oil thing. There's a blog that covers shipping around the world,
and that's right.
I don't know if you saw the story, but one of their stories said that Iran actually has these tankers lined up, ready to go, ready to leave
exactly.
with oil.
Exactly, we reported on that as well. At CNN, it's really something that they are so that. Because a lot of the question was, hey, Iran, they haven't produced a lot of oil in many years. They haven't been able to produce at full capacity. So there were questions about how quickly can they get that oil back online. But with these reports that they've been holding oil in tankers waiting, that has sort of brought to the forefront of people's minds that, yes, Iran can get this oil back online way faster than most people realize.
Yesterday, as we were celebrating Martin Luther King Day here in the United States, France announced they were in a state of economic emergency. And then we're also hearing, and you've written about this, and CNN's covered this too, the debt crisis in Puerto Rico is getting worse. How are these two things going to impact the world economies?
Sure. France is probably the bigger factor right now. And the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, has downgraded global growth, mainly because of China and oil. But certainly a lot of people were looking at Europe and saying, could they potentially grow this year, sort of finally turn the corner after the recession and really start to help power economic growth around the world. So it's very alarming to see that state of emergency and then that negative sentiment coming out of France. A lot of the numbers out of Germany as well have been disappointing in the last few weeks. I think what this speaks to, the world's trying to understand what role China really plays. So it's like a domino effect.
By examining your business risks in greater detail, we can reveal risk.
Sorry, go ahead.
We know that China plays, it's the world's second largest economy, and what we're trying to figure out is, as China slows down, how much does it drag the rest of the world down with it? And certainly Europe is one of its largest trading partners. Germany and France in particular rely heavily on exporting their goods to the rest of the world. And so those countries are, you know, we would expect them to slow down first before the United States here.
Note to CNNmoney.com, by the way, that was an ad that popped up on your website that we played on the air just then, so I apologize for that. You know, as we go forward through this week, we have a couple of economic reports. Earnings are still coming. Is it too soon to sort of maybe relax and watch this ride today, or should we be still nervous?
I would definitely say it's a little too – I mean, you always want to be relaxed as an investor. I keep looking at all the sea of red, telling myself investing is about decades, not about days. But I think the reality is the world is waiting for oil to bottom out. A lot of experts are saying that could happen this year, but, you know, they were sort of – some people were saying that last year too. So we are definitely probably in for a rocky road until oil finds that bottom. And, you know, it's around $30 a barrel again now, but it could easily drop to 20 or to 10. It's just as we get more and more information and until some of the major world players, including the United States, start to cut back on production.
The world
so
economic.
Until that happens, yeah.
Yeah, the World Economic Forum is getting ready to get underway in Davos. One of the leaders yesterday said that he's growing increasingly concerned about the global economy and all of the different factors that are impacting that. When you have the people who are at the very, very top saying stuff like that, that's not reassuring either, is it?
No, I've been, you know, at CNN, we've been stepping back and trying to ask ourselves, the bigger question here is, do you believe that this is another 2008 crisis? You know, it's normal for the market and the economy to have cycles, to have pullbacks. We're in what we call a correction. That's actually healthy. It's like taking a nap when you've had a long day. People need to recharge, and then the market and economic cycles also have these kind of recharge-like dips. But there's a difference between that kind of a somewhat healthy pullback. It hurts. People, no doubt about it, there will be some pain in the market and possibly the global economy. But do you believe this, that, or that this is a full-blown crisis, like what we saw that triggered the Great Recession? And I think right now the optimist case, it probably wins. And the reason that people are saying this is probably not a crisis is two factors. Number one, the world is still growing, and you've just articulated a number of factors that, yes, it's growing slower than we thought, but it's still growing. It's growing around 3% a year, despite all of these problems that we're having. And the United States, in particular, is still growing as its economy. So, you know, we're not in recession yet, at least not in the United States. I think the second key factor that makes me think, okay, this may not be another 2008, is that the world, and in particular the United States, simply is not in as much debt as we were before. So heading into 2008, both people had a lot more debt than they could handle, and the banks had a lot more debt than they could handle. And both of those situations, both people and banks, are in a much better place than they were in 2008. So that should help a lot. Even if we head into a slower period or even a downturn, if people have more, if you will, rainy day type cash going into this, any downturn we would have.
Heather Long, senior stock market and economy writer at CNN Money. You can find her on Twitter at @ByHeatherLong, B-Y Heather Long. Heather, good of you to be with us again on The Opening Bell.
Thanks.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 5:49. Welcome back. Good morning, everyone. SpaceX launched its Falcon 9 rocket Sunday and boosted a $364 million science satellite into orbit. The Jason 3 satellite is designed to measure sea levels precisely around the world. And that's a key indicator of global warming. Satellite will also monitor ocean conditions responsible for extreme weather. This is, according to NASA and NOAA, one of the key satellites that will help us monitor climate change moving forward. This was SpaceX's second launch in less than a month. It is the second time they have attempted to recover the Falcon 9's first stage. As you remember, back in December, they did it. They landed it upright on a launch pad. This part of the mission this time went so-so. This is what it sounded like as the rocket, returning from delivering that satellite to space, landed on a barge in the ocean. The rocket planted itself and then fell over and exploded. ABC News correspondent Mark Remillard is with us today on the opening bell from New York. Mark, SpaceX says the Sunday mission was a success despite that explosion.
Right. So there was a primary part of this mission, and then kind of SpaceX's own, their own part that they wanted to accomplish through this mission. And the primary mission was to launch this satellite called Jason 3 up into space. And this is a satellite that will orbit the Earth and take measurements of ocean levels. And so this way, climatologists and forecasters can monitor rising and falling oceans, and that way they can look for weather patterns and these kinds of things, how that will affect forecasts and whatnot. So that was the primary goal of this mission. The secondary goal, and the one that most people will probably be paying attention to, is the attempt to land this rocket vertically on a barge out in the middle of the ocean. And it's quite a feat to go through to try and do that. And they got very, very close. Elon Musk and SpaceX was very close to getting this thing to work. But unfortunately, it seems like one of the legs, as this rocket comes down, it launches out these legs that it lands on. One of the legs did not lock properly. The rocket toppled over and exploded on the barge, and there's actually some interesting video of it. So there's actually two parts of this mission. One was successful, the primary one, but the secondary goal wasn't quite as good.
Have you heard any of what went wrong? Because before this thing happened, there were reports that the waves were really high where this drone ship, this target ship, was. Do you think that may have had something to do with this? Because it was, for a second there, it looked like they had done it, and then it just fell over.
Yeah. So they were. Battling with some heavy waves, for sure. There were 12 to 15 foot waves at the time that they were launching off. So certainly you've got this barge, which is about the size of a football field, floating in the ocean and moving up and down. And so that makes everything a little bit more difficult for the company. But on Instagram today, Elon Musk posted a video of that explosion, and according to him, he suspects that there was ice buildup because there was a lot of fog, and so that created some condensation. And then as the rocket launched up, they suspect that there may have been some ice that forced that leg to not lock properly. And then, because you can see it actually touches down and it does stick, but then it just kind of a split second later starts to topple. And so I have not seen anything that it was a result of the barge moving as much as it was that this leg did not lock.
Well, why in the world would they want to land a rocket on a barge?
it sounds so counterintuitive to think of, right? It's, you've got a moving target, you've got a small target, you've got something that's bobbing up and down. It seems like it's such a difficult thing to do, and it is. But it actually makes a lot of sense. So the way that SpaceX does it is they have two launch sites, one in California, one in Florida. And depending on which way they want to go in the orbit determines where they launch. If they want to go west, they launch out of California, so they fly over the ocean, not over people and over populations. And so when that rocket shoots off and goes out to launch the next stage that'll go up into space, that rocket is now over the ocean. And so you could bring it back to the launch pad, which they actually did in Florida back in December, and it was successful. But that actually takes a lot of fuel, and you have to turn the rocket around, burn off some of the speed, and then bring this thing all the way back to where you started from. Versus the idea here is you can launch the rocket up out of the ocean, you can turn it around, burn off some of the speed, and then kind of keep it on its trajectory and bring it down in the ocean and then just haul it back. So it is a little more difficult, I think, initially, or this is what the company is thinking, is that, yes, this is more difficult to do now, but if we can essentially nail this down and do it every time, we're going to save a lot in fuel costs because we don't have to burn off as much, and we can actually launch higher because we can use more fuel during the launch.
And that's what brings us to our discussion, the business of space. Eventually, this is going to save companies a lot of money getting into space.
Yeah, absolutely. And so the, obviously, private industry now taking the leap into their own space explorations, they're in their own space missions. You're going to see more of this in the future, no doubt. What we're seeing here, which is, a private company, SpaceX, taking NASA payloads and NASA satellites up into space for NASA, whereas back in the day, obviously, NASA was the one that always sent their own things up into space. So you're going to see more of that. Space tourism is going to keep growing. But but for a private company, certainly the economy of space has to be feasible. And so certainly the goal here to land these rockets and get them on a barge and be able to reuse them is a way of economizing space travel for Elon Musk and Blue Origin and all these other private space companies, that they have to be able to keep this the cost down. But we're going to see more of this, and especially as these rockets get better and better at landing vertically and being reused, that could open a lot of doors.
And for space geeks like me, I mean, it's hard to give them a failing grade because it was cool to watch all of this stuff.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and they do, I think SpaceX does a really cool, for the average consumer, they had a whole broadcast. You know, they have all these people doing different segments, one at the launch pad, one at the, you know, at the control site, and you can see and follow along. And then they have these great graphics where you can see, you know, the where the actual rocket is versus the second stage, and once it's finally in orbit, it's becoming a almost spectator sport too, to watch these launches from home. It's a very interesting thing.
ABC News correspondent Mark Remillard joining us from New York this morning on the opening bell. The Dow futures again pointing higher this morning, in triple digit territory. The Dow futures up 264 points. S&P futures up 31, indicating a decent open later this morning on Wall Street. A couple of things on the business calendar today. Economic report, the National Association of Home Builders releases its housing market index at 9 o'clock Chicago time. And the Forbes European 30 is out today. This is the European 30 under 30 list, featuring 30 of the brightest stars in business under the age of 30. Also today, the atomic scientists officially released their decision on the doomsday clock, whether to push it forward or push it back. That's coming up later today. That's the opening bell for this morning. Thanks to our executive producer, Mary Sandberg. Production help from Kevin Powell, Ross Cochran. Our engineer is Ben Cortez. Have a great day. See you tomorrow. It's 5:57.